while working for an organization that delivers lunches to elderly shut-ins, a mother decided to take her four-year-old daughter on her afternoon rounds just to give her an experience, something she had not experienced before. And the little girl was unfailingly intrigued by the various appliances of old age, particularly the canes, the walkers, and the wheelchairs. At one house, Mom found her daughter staring at a pair of dentures soaking in a glass. And as Mom braced herself for the inevitable barrage of questions, her daughter merely turned, shook her head, and whispered, "The tooth fairy is never going to believe this." Historians tell us the coin to which Jesus requests today was probably a denarius of Tiberius, the reigning Caesar at the time. The coin would have borne on its obverse, the front side, both Tiberius's head and the legend, Tiberius Caesar, son of divine Augustus. Here is where Jesus delivers his famous answer: "Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." It is such a good and snappy answer that his antagonists were stunned and defeated and ultimately dispersed, not choosing to test him again. But the key for our understanding of this passage and why it counts as a blow against both parties of detractors, the Pharisees and their disciples, and the Herodians, the religious system and the secular system, is in grasping the analogy that Jesus is making when he holds up the coin. Seeing clearly what is Caesar's because he was showing it to them, Jesus' audience is prompted to ask, "Well then, what exactly belongs to God?" If the coins are Caesar's because they bear Caesar's likeness and inscription, then by analogy, what bears God's likeness and inscription? It is this second implied question that we ourselves so often neither ask or try to answer. But a Jewish audience familiar with the Torah would have quickly recognized what Jesus was suggesting. They would have known that it is we as human beings who bear God's likeness. For according to Genesis, God created man in his image and likeness. But we also bear God's inscription, for God's law is inscribed, as we hear in Exodus chapter 13, verse 9, "A sign on your hand and a memorial between your eyes, that the law of the Lord may be in your mouth." So important to understand this, especially as we keep hearing this whole mystery of the mark of the beast, which is placed on the right hand or the forehead of those forced to receive the mark. Remember, once again, Genesis says, "For God's law is inscribed as a sign on your hand and a memorial between your eyes." And so what the evil one is doing is he is ultimately trying to remove or cover God's prerogative and replacing it with a created thing in rebellion against God, which cannot stand. And it's important for us to understand that that is exactly what Karl Marx, the father of socialism, declares, that the person belongs to the state, which is why he had to argue that religion was the opiate of the people and that there was no God, that humanity itself was the highest being, therefore the product of the human work, which was the formation of the state, became all-powerful and all-sovereign. But this is a deception that this is ultimately a deception to deceive the world that the person belongs to anything but God, which is why we are seeing all created things begin to fall into ruin. That is a foundation built on sand. Thus, the import of Jesus' rejoinder is that one may owe taxes to Caesar, but one owes one's very being to God and God alone. Whatever civil obligation Jesus' followers might have, they must be understood within the context of our responsibility to God. For our duty to God claims the whole of our lives. So it is important for us to remember that absolutely no earthly government or power has any claim on your being. None whatsoever. No claim on your heart, on your mind, or your morality. But Almighty God does. And we are to make sure that we have that firmly fixed in our hearts and in our minds.